When I was 17, it was a very good year.
What are you doing?
Day 17, isn't it, listeners? Well, don't all answer at once. Welcome back. She's Heather.
He's Ferg. Any extra noises you might hear is the newest New Old Friend member.
She's actually sleeping because of my lovely singing.
I was about to call her Peter Attridge, but anyway, Peter Attridge is caught up in another murderous Yuletide mystery. He doesn't appear to be circling the answer.
But are you? Get in touch and let us know if you have an inkling as to who done it.
While you have a think about that, we're going to give you even more to ponder with question 17 of hashtag NovQuiz.
NovQuiz?
Nov. Quiz.
She's very tired.
I am.
Anyway, here's the question 17. And a creaky door. Viscum album is the Latin name for which Christmassy plant? Now, you must know that, Heather. You love to garden.
I do love to garden. That is it. I love to garden.
Okay.
Anyway, no idea what the answer is.
Now, luckily I do, and I'll be the one marking the quiz. Anyway, on with the next chapter of Crimed Clues. And Christmas!
Ding ding!
Crimes, Clues and Christmas, Chapter 17.
Brushing off his annoyance at the Sally-induced delay, O'Rowby and I hurried to the front desk, where the full glamour of Marlene Schweinvolger looked a little incongruous in the harsh lighting and stark sounds of a police station entrance hall. She was, as always, immaculately put together, wearing perfectly cut couture and not a hair out of place. There were, however, two differences between this Marlena and the one I had thus far encountered. Namely, she was without her elegant cigarette holder, and perhaps more pertinently, her face was not the composed vision of cool charm and desirability, but rather slightly taut with what looked like worry.
Miss Schweinvolger, we were hoping to speak with you, actually. We've just been speaking with Mr. Lyle.
Cakey, what did he say? No, not here. Is there somewhere private that you can talk?
She was glancing around furtively, her slick blonde head, a little like a dormouse that had caught scent of a predator on the breeze.
Of course. Please, walk this way, said O'Rowby, heading back along the corridor.
I will follow, but I will walk with good posture, thank you. Not the hand shuffling you demonstrate.
I followed on behind Marlena, who, true to her word, strode along purposefully with her chin high in the air. We ended up in the interview room directly adjacent to the one which currently housed Tatum Lyle. Not that Marlena would know that, of course. It was a perfect mirror image of his. She took a seat on one side of the table, and O'Rowby and I the other.
What did Cakey say to you, if you please, Inspector O'Rowby?
That is privileged information, Ms. Schweinvolger.
You mean you are not going to tell me?
I'm afraid not. She looked from O'Rowby to me. Don't go looking at Mr. Attridge. He is here as my guest, and wouldn't dare of going against my orders, would you, Attridge?
He said, with a slight turn to me and a warning in his voice.
No, not a bit of it. Sorry, Marlena. This is O'Rowby's show, I'm afraid. What he says goes. I could probably get you a glass of water or something, though, if you'd like.
Is this good cop, bad cop?
Mr. Attridge isn't a cop.
He's right.
He's right. I'm not. I'm an art investigator.
So good art investigator, bad cop?
Suggested Marlena.
I suppose so, I agreed. Apparently not. We're not playing any games here. But if we were, Attridge, telling the suspects we are would be the number one thing that we wouldn't do.
Ah, I see your partner has made a mistake, and now you try to cover for him.
He's not my partner, and I didn't make a mistake.
So this was part of the plan?
Yes. No, there is no plan.
There is no plan. A young woman has died. You have arrested an innocent young man, and you say there is no plan?
Well, that can't be true, is it, O'Rowby, old chap? Well, surely you must have a plan of some sort. I mean, keeping to yourself what Cakey said about how he's happy to keep Sturm and accept anything that comes his way, but that Marlena here can clear the whole thing up with a simple word. When you said that you weren't going to reveal that, that must have been part of a plan, wasn't it?
We weren't going to tell her that! You're ruining the plan!
Exploded O'Rowby.
Quite unreasonably. You just said there wasn't a plan. How can I ruin a thing that doesn't exist? That'd be like getting the blame for a stain on the Tooth Fairy's dress, or giving the abominable snowman a bad haircut, or insulting a politician's honour.
The inspector sucked in air through his nose and sighed heavily.
Just be quiet, Attridge.
Is what Attridge said true? Did Cakey really admit to doing this horrible thing?
I suppose there isn't any mileage in withholding it now. Mr. Lyle has not said anything very much beyond the short statement he asked us to pass on to you. He said you have the power to shed light on the whole thing, but that if you chose not to, he'll maintain his silence and take whatever consequences are coming to him. Which at the moment, I'd be inclined to say, would be a manslaughter charge at the very least. Quite possibly, murder.
Marlena took in this news with wide eyes and bit her lip. I could see she was teetering on the edge of a momentous decision. Marlena, Keiki's willing to risk his life for whatever this secret is. I'd want to help him out if I was in your shoes.
You wouldn't fit my shoes. I have tiny feet.
I think you know what I'm saying, Marlena.
I do.
She took a deep breath.
Okay. Can you keep what I'm about to tell you a secret?
That will depend on the nature of what you tell us, Miss Schweinwalger. If it includes criminal activity, absolutely not.
It is not criminal. Shameful, yes, but not criminal. Keiki has an alibi for the time of the incident.
He doesn't actually, ma'am. He got BV and Flipper to lie for him.
I know he asked them to lie for him because at this time he was...
She winced at whatever she was about to say.
Lying with me in the cleaning supply cupboard on the dressing room corridor.
What exactly do you mean, Miss Schweinwalger?
I have been having a secret relationship with Keiki for many months. When I bumped into Mr. Artridge, I was on my way for a pre-arranged rendezvous with Keiki. We had just finished and I was smoking a cigarette when we heard all the commotion and Mr. Artridge leading people to Daisy's dressing room.
When you say just finished...
The cigarette was post-coital, Inspector. I'm not going to talk any more about it. But there you have it. Keiki could not have released the sandbag because he was with me.
O'Rowby looked a little stunned, and I can't say I blame him. The thought of Keiki and Marlena together put me in mind of those shocking pictures you see at the cinema, with the giant ape crawling up the sides of buildings and taking a fancy to the pretty blonde ingenue. But each to their own, I suppose. Now you mention it, I do remember smelling honeysuckle smoke in the corridor, Inspector.
Hmm, growled O'Rowby, working his jaw with his fingers.
An alibi from the person for whom the facts suggest Mr. Lyle may have committed the act in the first place is hardly the most compelling evidence.
Inspector O'Rowby, you must believe me. I would never admit to such a shameful dalliance as this unless it was the truth. I would truly rather have the charge of murder than for people to know I am doing the things I am doing with Keiki. But I cannot stand by and let him throw his life away.
I don't know.
Ask yourself again, why would I want Daisy Love dead?
She stole your role and betrayed you to Rollins.
She betrayed me? How? No, it does not matter. You obviously don't know about the world of ballet, Inspector. If I wanted to harm Daisy Love, all I would need to do was start spreading rumours about her. But in truth, I had no need to, because she was failing to take her chance anyway. Ask Mr. Barrington if he regretted making her prima, and he will tell you he would welcome me back for the production with open arms.
She paused. It was clear she could read that her words were hitting home with O'Rowby. She pressed her advantage.
What about this? I will leave with you here my passport, and promise I will not leave the city until this investigation is over. Please release Keiki.
There was not a charge in the air of the room. I could almost hear the internal machinery of O'Rowby's mind working through the permutations. He had both his hands placed flat on the table in front of him and was staring at the space between them so that he looked like one of those fairground automatons that claim to be able to predict your future. I remember ponying up my penny for a go on one as a child and being mocked mercilessly by my friends when it told me the love of my life would be a dark-haired man with a small beard. But the joke was on them when I discovered Caravaggio, who is the undoubted love of my life. What that man does with light illuminates the darkest recesses of my soul. Anyway, O'Rowby signalled he'd come to a decision by slapping his hands onto the table.
Fine. I'll release you and Mr. Lyle, but this is not over. Shenanigans of any sort won't be tolerated. Do you understand?
No. What is shenanigans? Does it involve a goat?
Nonsense. Funny business.
Are you talking about sex, Inspector? I don't know what business of yours that is.
Yes, quite right. That's not cricket, Inspector. I'm not talking about sex. I just mean, do not go anywhere.
I have said I will not.
We got up and left the room. O'Rowby opened the door to the room. Keiki was in and let him go with the same warning.
Mr. Lyle, we've spoken with Miss Schweinwalger and believe there to be sufficient evidence to warrant your release, but... If we let you go, we fully expect cooperation and no funny business.
Keiki raised his eyebrows.
Are you talking about knocking boots?
No, just don't leave the city.
All right, course.
He glanced sheepishly at Marlena, who had her head turned slightly away, but looked back at him from the corner of her eye.
Thank you for coming, Marlena.
The truth was necessary in this circumstance.
Well, thank you all the same. Can I walk you back to the theatre?
Absolutely not. The truth is not necessary everywhere. You can walk behind me and we will continue exactly as before when we return.
I would have thought such a blow would have caused Keiki to become crestfallen. But looking at him as he received this edict, his crest was far from fallen. Indeed, it was flying high and there was mischief in his eyes.
Exactly as before. Nice one.
Ah, I understood. After the mismatched couple exited, I turned to O'Rowby. Well, Inspector, what now? I asked. I've got some work to do, preparing another case for trial. I'll be back at the theatre tomorrow. If you want, you can continue. But I don't want any shenanigans from you, either. And by shenanigans, you don't mean... I offered with a smile that was not returned.
Don't test me, Artridge.
I found myself at something of a loose end. Normally, in such instances, I'd wander to the club, but for some reason it didn't appear. I found myself strolling through streets festooned with all the decorations of the season until I reached the doors of the Duke of Courland. The exertion I was putting into the case was clearly doing odd things to me, as I found myself actually looking forward to the pint of cider Jimmy would undoubtedly force upon me when I entered. I pushed at the door and went in.
Artridge!
Hollered Jimmy at great volume, even for him.
You're becoming a regular! Pint of cloudy, is it?
Again, I witnessed the invisible hand of Ma McMickle guiding her son from afar.
But no more freebies, I'm afraid. You'll have to pay your way from now on.
No, absolutely. I'll have a pint, please.
Sure you don't want to?
Grinned Jimmy, nodding over to a corner table where, sat alone amongst the tinsel, was Chas McConstance. Oh, right. Well, go on then. Is that what she's drinking? Two, please. I spilled a bit from each glass as I made my way over to Chas. My hands were trembling slightly. I was nervous. Hello. Mind if I, join you? I stammered, redundantly adding, I brought cider, and raising my liquid burdens, spilled a little bit more.
I didn't think you liked the cider,
replied Chas, tilting her head to one side so her lovely hair fell over one shoulder. Oh, well, it's grown on me a bit. I actually quite like it now.
I see. Is one for me, or are you settling in for a long evening?
Oh, no, what one is most definitely for you.
If I was Mylena, you'd be buying me champagne, no doubt.
Do you want champagne? I can get you champagne. Actually, I probably can't. Don't imagine Jimmy stocks the stuff. But he could possibly rustle up a passable Chablis. If not passable, probably potable.
I'm pulling your leg, Artridge. I like the cider.
Oh, good. I wasn't confident about the Chablis.
How's the case going?
She asked. I'm not sure I should really be talking about it.
That's fine. What do you want to talk about, then?
Staring into Chaz's twinkling eyes, my mind was a total blank. We arrested Keiki but let him go again, I blurted.
What? Keiki?
In the end, I told her everything, but swore her to secrecy. After I'd finished, conversation moved on to other things. She told me about how all her designs start off as sketches and showed me some of her drawings, which I compared favourably to the various artists they reminded me of, and the evening passed in the blink of an eye, until Jimmy clanged his bell for last orders and turfed us out.
Good night then, Mr. Artridge,
she said. It really was, I replied. See you tomorrow. And I walked home on winged feet. I fear Caravaggio may have competition. Crimes, Clues and Christmas is a New Your Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series. Written and performed by Fergus Woods-Dunlop and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Your Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.